Welcome to Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You, the podcast that focuses on Christians that are active in everyday life. Join in as we speak to everyone from successful business owners to educators to athletes about their faith and how it helps them reach out and revolutionize those around them to do the same. And now get ready to roar with your host, the voice of manifestation, John Fuller.
Hey, Roar Nation, John Fuller here, and I am really looking forward to today and tonight's interview with my new guest, Travis Thrasher. Travis, you ready to roar, buddy?
I am, John. Thanks for having me, man.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so Roar Nation, I usually read off people's bios, but truth be told, I got on Travis's website, and I read it, and I was so impressed that I decided Travis needs to tell you guys how awesome he is, because I think he's a rock star, and I'm being serious, because anybody that's written over 50 books in my book is a rock star. So, Travis, the mic is yours, my friend.
Well, thank you. Well, I do write fiction, so I guess I can just talk how wonderful I am, because I'll just be making up things. First off, thanks for having me on your podcast. I love it, and love what you're doing, you and your wife, so keep it up. And I am a full-time writer, been full-time writer over 11 years. And I was just talking to some students, some college students today about it, but I said, I brought them all these books, literally over 50 something, to show them, this is how you can live as a full-time writer. You have to, unless you are lucky, like a J.K. Rowling or something like that, and that's never happens. Right. You kind of have to juggle a little bit of everything. So, fiction has always been my love. I wanted to be a writer since third grade. I wrote my first novel in ninth grade, and it was terrible, but I still have it. It's written in pencil. It's great. Yeah. But what that did is that showed me, hey, I could do it once. Let me try to do it again. I worked at a Christian publishing house called Tyndale House Publishers for 13 years, and I did author relations. So I learned all about lots and lots of different types of writers. And in a way, that really helped train me for what I'm doing now, because one of the things I do now is I collaborate. I'm a co-writer, ghostwriter, whatever you want to call it. But a lot of times I'm helping to write somebody's memoir, for instance.
Nice.
And so they'll invite me into their homes and, you know, suddenly just tell me things that they've only told three or four other people. And it's great, but it's also like you're dealing with lots of different types of people, because I don't stick in one type of world. Like, I don't only do sports memoirs or something like that. So I love it. I feel like I'm grateful to be able to do something I love. Fiction is still my true love and passion, but I feel like if you can tell us a good story, you can really kind of do almost any type of book. So I lived in the Chicago area with my wife and our three young girls, and we moved up to Grand Rapids area about a year and a half ago, and we love it. That's my rock star life, which does not sound like a rock star, but I have worked with them.
We'll get into that too. Okay, so there's a lot of things I'm going to pull out of you, really interested about your story. But along this journey, just curious, is there like an inspirational scripture, or I should say inspirational quote or scripture, that's kind of been a foundation for you throughout your life, or maybe even this season?
Wow. I'm one of those people, if you ask me, hey, quote a scripture, your favorite scripture, I never have it memorized, because I can't tell a joke for the life of me. What my scripture has been since we moved, and it's from the Old Testament, but it's really I'm going to paraphrase in my own way.
I paraphrase all the time. I said John's version.
This is the Thrasher version.
Okay.
But it's it's with Moses and the Israelites. And it's really when he's being told, you know, don't forget what God has done for you. Yeah. You know, he delivered you from, Egyptians and just don't forget him. And of course the Israelites, their whole story is they're constantly forgetting him. But, you know, I viewed moving here as in a lot of ways, it was a necessity just from a financial standpoint, because Illinois is very expensive to live in. And there were a lot of opportunities here, and it was such a blessing. But at the same time, you know, I felt like God was telling me, look, don't get comfortable and then suddenly, you know, forget about me again, you know, like as it is so easy to do when we're just settled and comfortable and all that sort of stuff. So, so I didn't even really paraphrase. I don't know what verse that is because I have it somewhere around here.
No, it's funny you said that. I'm actually reading one of John Maxwell's books right now.
Yeah,
on leadership. And that was one of his devotionals was going into. I've been reading a lot of the story of Joseph. And yeah, then just before that was talking about the exact story that you just talked about of Moses leading the Israelites through all that. And he delivers that. So anyways, yeah, that's good stuff, because like you said, I think it is really easy when we're going through hard times, all of us cry, oh, Jesus, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, but when things are easy, it sometimes we do get laxed, and we do have to be really cautious of that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. I think the other thing is busyness can, you know, especially my last few years, I have been incredibly busy just because I've been like, okay, I'm trying to stay afloat as a full-time writer and doing all these projects. And so it's easy then to get in this whirlwind where you literally are kind of just so frazzled that you do cry out to God, like, I need some peace and quiet. But at the same time, you know, life is a whole balance of, you know, you're trying to balance things. Yeah. And, I have been completely out of whack. I guess my last name in some ways fits the last few years. Because trying to do all this, I mean, you're doing this new venture. Well, it's not new. You said it's been a couple years now, right? Your podcast. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, when you're starting up something and you're an entrepreneur, and I never intended to own my own business, but in a sense, that's what I've done for 11 years.
Yeah.
And doing that while having three young girls, which that alone is terrifying to me. Yeah. And, all those things.
I have two.
You have two? Okay. Yeah. I love them, but you know, I just, it's always like, man, I'm so ill equipped for everything.
And we all are. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to jump into, at least your life journey. So I'm really interested. What I like, what you said at the beginning though, is, you know, right now you're a full-time writer, but you know, before that, you got into the publishing side and you're able to see that. But I want to go back even just a little bit before that. What got you into, or how did you start writing? Maybe like college, or how you pursued that? Because I'm really curious as far as your journey of how you've gotten where you're at now.
Sure. Well, it was third grade. I think I said this, that I wanted to become a writer. My teacher encouraged me, and from that moment on, she had been reading the Narnia Chronicles. So this bit of encouragement, along with her reading, because I was never a very good reader, those two things put this desire in me to go, you know what? I would love to be a writer. That's what I want to do. And so I have always wanted to do it. I've been writing my whole life, and I've never been a very disciplined person. I was never very good at school. When you mentioned college, I ended up following my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife. I followed her to a small Christian college. It was Trinity Christian College. But really, I was not, besides wanting to be a writer, I was pretty much a mess. I mean, I felt like I was going to a party school, but it was Trinity Christian. And, you know, God had to bang me over the head a few times. I got kicked out a couple times. I managed to graduate, but you know, I was not a good student. But at the same time, this goal was, I want to do this thing. So I was very fortunate to get a job like 9 months out of college at the Christian publisher, Tyndale House. And, the job was author relations, and I told them, I said, you know, if I want to be a full-time writer, this is my dream. I want to get published. But if I can't do that, the second best thing I could imagine is to spend time with writers, you know, to talk to them, to be, in a sense, I was kind of help desk. And it started at a very administrative level where I was sending out checks and books and gifts and all this. But it ended up morphing into a real key acquisitions role. And I often joke where I might be like playing counselor or bartender or help desk or concierge, but I learned a lot about lots of different aspects. And while I was there, I really, it took me about 8 novels that I wrote all the way through, big, really terrible manuscripts that I tried to get published. And so I was in the world of publishing and I had contacts. And, but what I had to do is figure out, okay, first off, I can't go and be ambitious and do these, you know, incredible novels, because I just didn't have the skill and talent. I needed to learn it. So my first book, it was called The Promise Remains, and it was this simple little love story. And, you know, I look at it now and I'm like, you know, I still think it's a tender and sweet book. But it was very, very simple and straightforward. But thankfully, that got published. And it's been this thing where I've always wanted to do it. The big sort of aha and change in my life, especially in the last few years, has been God telling me, okay, why are you doing this? And because I think I figured out the whole, you know, who am I, you know, this kid wanting to be a writer. And then you grow up and it's like, okay, great. I'm a writer and I have a, you know, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a Christian. These are these things. But what God has been telling me over and over, it's like, okay, so, but why are you doing this thing? Like, why are you writing? And that's been, I'm still learning that, but a few years ago, it was, my eyes got open, because I was like, well, you know, I've been writing Christian fiction. I've been writing a lot of books for Christian people. So doesn't that mean I'm giving it over to the Lord? And absolutely not. I mean, it was this thing that I was like holding in my fist, you know, clenched, and it was like my precious, so to speak. It was like this thing. So that's been, I said, something that God has been teaching me. And probably always will. But the great thing is that as much as I love writing, I'm always like, God, if this is not what you want, then, you know, open another door, and doors continue to open in this world. So I'm fortunate for that.
Hey everyone, I recently found an app that I want to share with you that I think would bless you. It's called Church Home. And what I really enjoy is the convenience of having great sermons. They have inspirational quick videos, and you have the ability to connect with other Christians all over the world. And what I love about Church Home is that it's not about excluding people, and it's not about being perfect. It's about being together where everyone's welcome. So Church Home was started 25 years ago, and they had the belief that church isn't so much about a place, but about the people. And that was the thinking behind their new Church Home global app. It allows you to connect with people all around the world and have honest discussions, great, meaningful relationships, and the coolest part is you can do it all from your phone. So with Church Home Global, you always have access to a positive space and a strong community of people. And I just want to invite you guys today to join me at the Church Home Global app. You can download it for free at Church Home Global app. It's available on the App Store or Google Play. And you can text UPLIFT to 555-888. That's Church Home, CHURCHOME Global. Again, it's available at the App Store or Google Play, or you can text UPLIFT to 555-888. See you there. Okay, man, you said a lot of really good stuff. I don't think you realized it, so I'm excited about this. Okay, when you back up, you made a comment, and this is where I love what you well, I'm not even going to get to that first. I want to ask you this. At the publishing company, what did you feel like you learned? Because it was a stepping stone, and you had mentioned, you said, I learned a lot in that world. What did you feel like were some key takeaways for you there?
You know, the probably big picture is I learned that anybody and everybody can be a writer. I mean, they can. I mean, I always tell people, I think everybody has a story in them that's worth putting into a book. Now, whether it sells 10 copies or 100,000, that's a separate thing.
Right.
But I worked with such a variety of people that, you know, I learned that, okay, well, there are business people that have books published. Sometimes they don't write them. Sometimes they kind of write them. There'll be novelists who are more quiet and reserved and, you know, that sort of thing. I met all these different types of people, and with each of them, I would learn, like, why are they writing? I would learn how they write, you know, just everything about that. And what I ended up learning is it's like, well, you don't have to be this one particular type of person to be a writer. I mean, it's so diverse. I also I learned kind of everything and anything about publishing, because on any given day, I might get a call or an email about something completely random. Like, you know, I found an error on page 305 of my book, and it'd be something that, you know, I would maybe talk to the production department about, or lots of financial stuff, tons and tons, because everything, all the money, you know, I'd send it out, I'd send out contracts, just everything. So it was almost like every single day I had an opportunity to go to a writing conference, because I'd be talking to editors. And I really began to see things. When I quit Tyndall, I was so utterly burnt out. And like every great novelist, you put all your woes into a story. But I wrote this book called Sky Blue, and it's still one of my favorites, but it's terribly cynical. And my wife read it, and she was like, you know, are they publishing this? This is terrible. Like, she was like, do these authors know who they are? But I was so burnt out, but at this, it was because I had just been kind of doing everything and anything for people.
Yeah.
But I look back and I go, wow, what a blessing, you know, because I learned about that, and that gave me a lot of fuel to then, when I went on my own, which was crazy in itself, I at least knew some of the waters that I was getting myself into, for better or worse.
I'm curious, because I've seen this happen in my life and other people. Did you feel like God might have been speaking to you to kind of exit out before you got burnout? And that was maybe God's way of kind of nudging you out the door, saying, all right, it's like, it's really time for you to leave? Or, yeah.
Well, yeah, yes and no. I mean, I think at a certain point, I was so just jaded and overworked and exhausted and everything, where I don't think I could have heard from God at some point. But I ended up doing a book tour where I drove on kind of quote unquote Route 66. I know, you know, it's.
I live on Route 66.
Do you? Well, I
seriously do. Yeah.
Yeah. I know I went through, I mean, I really tried to stay, of course, I'm going on highways. I didn't actually go on the old road, but I did that, and I went to like 10 different bookstores. You know, I did signings and stuff. But there was, long story short, one day I got lost going to, is it the Grand Canyon West? Is that what they call it? Where I ended up discovering PS at the time, ended up going to that glass walkway. Remember that? Have you seen that? Or
I don't know if I have.
Is it called glass walkway? It's this thing. It looks like a horseshoe, and it extends over the Grand Canyon.
Yeah,
and
I've heard of that. Yeah.
And so through that whole experience, I had this Indian guide, and this sounds all I can't sum it up in like a minute or two, but I have to. But I had this Indian guide me over this glass walkway, because I'm petrified of heights. And that, along with about four or five other things, it was kind of like billboards for me where God was saying, okay, Travis, this is time. You have to take a leap of faith. I mean, but I guess it doesn't, when I say it's an Indian guide and God is talking to me, that I don't know. Anyway,
we might need to cut and edit those in different parts of the podcast.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's awesome.
It's not the Indian guide. But anyway, all that said, I think God sometimes has to get my attention with a 2x4 over my head.
I understand.
And there have been times where he's also, I mean, two of the most probably desperate times in my writing career have resulted when I've just been like, God, you know, I need something. I need a door to open. And those two projects, one was called a novelization called Do You Believe? And I was like, okay. And the other was a book I wrote with a journey guy called Don't Stop Believing. And they came at moments where I'm not kidding you. If I told it in a detailed form, it's really God saying, Travis, do you believe? Because I know you're not going to hear me. You know, you're a kindergartner. You need this. Do you believe, Travis? Or don't stop believing, Travis. Maybe my next book a few years, you know, in the next year or two will be continue to believe. Yeah. Or do you hear? I don't know. But anyway, I think I answered 5 questions there.
No, that's okay. We're all over the place. It's good. So I'm going to go back in more though. You made the other comment, which I was actually really excited about, and it would spurred on for more questions for other podcasts. But you said you did not have the skill or the talent and you had to learn. I really enjoyed the fact that you said that, because most people, when I would read your bio and it says, man, you've written 50 books, I'm going to think, well, man, this guy's just been, you know, he came out of his mom's womb writing. I mean, the guy's a stud. And, but I like what you said. You had passion, and that passion led you to pursue skill and talent. Would you talk about that a little bit? Because I think a lot of people don't recognize, obviously you've put in a lot of time, hard work and dedication to get where you're at, but people don't see that. They just see, like I did, 50 books.
Yeah, sure.
And I'd love for you to talk about that, because I think that's really important.
Yeah, I very much believe that I am, you know, talent is one of these things that if as a writer or painter or something like that, some of that is subjective, but I was never the great student. I never did well in even things like English. I had imagination, but I struggled reading when I was, you know, throughout my whole childhood. And even now, I would say, I tell people, I go, you know, I think I'm a good writer. I know I'm not some great writer. There are moments where I feel like, wow, that was pretty good. But sometimes the stuff I think is pretty great, it's not. I mean, editors have told me, and I have very, very thick skin. The reason I feel like I am, quote unquote, successful, and when I say that, again, I don't wake up going, wow, I feel successful. I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
But I can look back and go, okay, that's a lot of books. And the number one thing is persistence. And, you know, I just, I've been very fortunate. I mean, even getting the job at a publishing house, that was fabulous because it allowed me to get into that world. But, you know, writing 7 novels before you publish one, that's persistence. So with the writing thing, and I think creative arts, but even writing, I mean, singing, if you can't sing, okay, I know they have auto tune and stuff like that, but if you can't sing, then it's going to be hard. You know, you're probably not going to have a career as a singer. You can't tell somebody dream big and you can be in the NBA. Well, you have to have the ability and the talent. Writing is something that you will always be getting a little better at, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you can.
Yeah.
And you have editors and, you know, I'm a different writer than I was when I was 20 or 30. And I still look at myself. I mean, I'm still getting comments from editors and people I work with, and their job is not to praise me. So probably about 90% of the time I'm getting negative input. That's why I'm always like, you know, one of my 12-year-old daughter's friend, he's a boy, and he said, yeah, your dad's pretty cool. And I was like, that is the best thing I've ever heard. Like, at least in the last year, I need affirmation. I need to get out of my house. Anyway, but that, you know, that being said, I think that persistence thing and the ability to take input, feedback, and I've had some really, really strange things happen in my career where multiple, like three or four different projects that have been written and about ready to be published, they've been canceled. I mean, I've had really, so things that, you know, it's like it happens in publishing. And, you know, I hear things about movie directors and I'm like, oh my goodness, I could never be a movie director or any sort of creative art. But, you know, when I'm talking to people who are wanting to get published, I hate the term aspiring writer, because if you write, you write. But if you're wanting to get published in the traditional sense, I just say, you know, it's very difficult. Every year it gets more difficult because of the publishing industry. But I just say, keep at it and finish what you start. And honestly, look at these books of mine. I do not consider myself some amazing talent. Now, I do sincerely believe that if I keep at it, maybe everything will work out that somehow I can do this. Just, I can hit one completely out of the park. And I look at, and I'm not going to say I could never do a book like this, but Harper Lee writes To Kill a Mockingbird. She has no idea. And she was not prolific, of course. She did not know she was writing a classic. And that was a completely different era. But I do believe that maybe, who knows, you know, I could just, something comes out of nowhere. And what would be funny is people would be like, wow, like that guy wrote these weird books. And, or they'd read one, you know, they'd read like Sky Blue and they'd be like, wow, that was terrible. How do you do that? I mean, you know, I don't know. And because I do value what I do, and I do have to take I think it's easy to take the criticism. I think I'm hard on myself. I've worked with enough artists and I've met enough authors. I mean, some of that is just, you know, that insecurity, I think, is one of the reasons why sometimes we do create. And when I hear, I mean, Bruce Springsteen, and he's got all these just issues and demons and, you know, and here's this, he's Bruce. The boss. And we all have them. And again, you know, it's by God's grace. I really do. I'm like, God, you're still allowing me to do this, but it can't be about me. And there's kind of a nice thing about it, because when it is about me, I get a lot more stressed. And when I go, okay, God, here, you know, and I think like the latest book, American Omens, in a sense was, it was an opportunity to do something I love, you know, write fiction, but I also really truly didn't worry about, you know, am I going to be too preachy? Is this okay to say? I mean, I just said, you know what, here we go. I'm going to just do the dump and try to do the best job I can. And I'm not going to hold back. And so it was kind of fun to do that.
I'm really glad that you brought that up. It's a great segue to get into that. So, and that's the main reason for this podcast, is one, to get to know you and kind of your journey. But will you dive into American Omens as far as why you wrote it and kind of what it's about, what inspired you to write it, and give our listeners a tease into why they're going to go buy your book now?
American Omens is interesting because it was the first time where a publisher contacted me, and they were contacting actually a variety of authors, and they sent out a premise where they said, you know, we want to find a writer in a series of books that kind of talk about the future persecuted church. And so what they did is, I mean, it was completely out of the blue, and they asked people like me for, you know, could you write maybe a, you know, 4 or 5 page synopsis. And what they ended up doing is, I don't know how many authors there were, but they kind of had this kind of contest competition where they got multiple submissions, and then it went to like the next stage where I wrote maybe two or three chapters. And so American Omens, they ended up going with it. And the interesting part about it is it's a Christian publisher. It's Waterbrook Multnomah. They're a division of Random House. And the people who really told them, kind of came up with the idea, it's the people in New York, because they saw, this was before Trump was elected, but even then they saw a great division in the country. They saw all these things happening, and they really did see a market. They said, you know, there's a lot of people in this box. And the box they were saying is, I think, the Fox News Hannity crowd box type thing. And they just said, you know, we could see fiction really doing well in this. And so that was the initial time where I started to think there's a premise. And I haven't read a lot of sci-fi, but I love especially sci-fi movies. Like Blade Runner to me is one of the best. And so I imagine 20 years in the future, but I really had to be very realistic about it. And so it was different because it wasn't some idea that had just initially sparked inside of me one day and then starts to grow. Instead, it's presented to me and I have to kind of run with the idea and run really fast. And even like the very, very big, big idea I had in the first draft was I basically had God doing a Sodom and Gomorrah with Chicago, wiping it out. And it's not like there's a chance that he would not wipe it out. I mean, he just, at the end of the book, he wipes Chicago, it's gone. And then, you know, the publisher knew I was going to do this, but once I wrote it all out, it wasn't good. I mean, there were some theological things wrong with it, and it wasn't a very happy ending. And I was kind of like, oh, yeah. And I think that's one of the things you get when you're writing so quickly and, you know, you're... So all that said, it was really amazing because like one of my closest friends, along with my father, for years they've been talking about they're just very, very urgent in terms of their faith and what's happening in the world. And the two of them really influenced me, along with just lots of things happening in my own life and stuff, where I ended up writing this futuristic book, but it was very personal. It's imagining things happening 20 years from now. And the crazy thing about it is, you know, because it deals with the church as we know it, Christianity being basically in almost outlawed, but it's not some dystopian 1984 government. It's not that. But a big part of it is technology. A big part of it is, you know, I don't get into politics, but I really do just the divisiveness that we even have now, it only just continues to get worse. And I imagine certain things, but while I was writing it, even things that have to do with social media and privacy and all this, well, I'm writing about those. And then all of a sudden things pop up like Facebook and Twitter and, you know, Mark Zuckerberg has to go before Congress or the Senate, you know, to talk about Facebook privacy things. And so it's weird because those issues are right there in our lives, the issues of technology and then the issues of faith and what that looks like. And, you know, and I mention it sort of like, it's a hate crime. Like they put certain things into the box of this is hateful speech. This is a hate crime. And, you know, the way the gospel is pretty offensive. I mean, if you tell somebody, you know, talking about hell is offensive. I mean, there are people that are professing that they're believers and they are saying, you know, I don't know if I buy into the notion of hell. So even that very idea is offensive. And if you tell somebody, I don't believe in what you're saying, and actually what the Bible says is you're going to spend eternity in hell. That's not great. That's not something that people love to hear, right?
Right.
I don't like to hear it. I grew up listening to preachers preach it. And that's something that my father, he's passionate about people who are in church who, they don't really have an authentic relationship with Christ. That's his passion. But anyway, all of that, there's this big smorgasbord, this big pot of, of stuff that I poured into American Omens. And, it was kind of wild because, again, I was learning on the fly, like trying to figure out what is technology going to look like in 20 years, imagining what Christian faith might look like.
So give us a peek a little bit into that, kind of like where you imagine technology in 20 years.
Well, the biggest thing that I kind of write about in the book, but I also was studying, is this whole thing of algorithms, and which is just, I'm going to joke.
It's actually fascinating.
It is, but it's, I was going to say, yeah, that's exactly what you want to do is buy a book, 400 page book on algorithms. But actually I have, and it's interesting and they're terrifying because, yeah. And I've heard people say this, it's not artificial intelligence that we should be worried about. It's algorithms. It's not like the Terminator coming and, they're going to, it's algorithms. And we all see this, like, Facebook, and suddenly Chick-fil-A pops up and we're like, wow, how did they know that I like Chick-fil-A? Well, of course.
I drove by there today.
Yes. And that's like algorithms 101. It's so basic, but algorithms are everywhere and they are still created by you and me. I mean, they're created by human beings who have biases. And so that's a whole area that I go into because one of the characters, she is called an, I'm trying to even remember, she's called an architect, like an algorithms architect, but she works for, I imagine a future in where Apple and Amazon, I kind of imagine that you have these kind of Amazon and Apple morph together. So you have even a bigger entity like that. I imagine social media is almost a thing of the past because it got so out of hand. And like, for instance, the younger generation, they think Facebook's already kind of, it's for older people. Facebook's had, they did not have a good year last year, but I imagine there's still remnants of it, but it's not like it is today. Cause people were like, yeah, remember those days? Everybody's taking selfies. It was so stupid, but it's also regulated by the government. So these are things like, some of the stuff I research and I'm like, I could see this happening. Other stuff like, I'm imagining this, who knows, but the algorithms thing, the one character who works on those, she's working on emotional algorithms where it's not just, something that is, okay, this thing pops up. But it's truly something that's a part of you. And I get into kind of, one of the, probably the biggest bits of technology is this thing that I call synapses, which is, it's not a, like a brain chip. Yeah. That's like been in science fiction and stuff. But it really is something that is, in your head. It's not linked to your brain, but it might as well be like it's your iPhone, your, but it's a part of you. So it just makes it easier. And even when I got into that, they're like, they're already well down the road of trying to do those sorts of things. You have lots of different people that are, Elon Musk and stuff, they're trying these things out. I didn't want to make it so far-fetched that, wow, I can read what somebody else is thinking. I just tried to do like, wow, who would have imagined that we have the world in our hand when we have our wonderful smartphone?
You know what I was going to tell you? Think about this when Jerry Jenkins, who you brought up when you did the Left Behind series, it talks about in Revelation that there's going to be the two witnesses.
Yeah.
The whole world is going to see them. Well, yes. If you go back 20 years, I still remember even 30 years, people were like, how's that even possible that everybody live at one time could see that? Well, we couldn't, nobody could wrap their mind around it at the time. Now we're like, yeah, duh, Facebook Live, Twitter, anything. It'd be no big deal. The whole world could see it right now.
Yeah, totally. I've thought that so many times. And I remember, you know, when the Left Behind series just started and the internet was, you know, relatively new, but that was unheard of. It was crazy. Yeah. And the thing with numbers and, you know, I get into a little bit of also conspiracy things. And if you start going down the rabbit holes of conspiracy,
that never stops.
It never ends. And it's scary. It's terrifying. It's crazy. But I also have a character in there who is really kind of a conspiracy nut. And, some of his stuff is, he finds out it's true. And actually some of it's not, which is, you know, part of life. But, the way technology is changing us. I mean, I think a big thing is it's not even the evils of like being invaded, our privacy, this and that. One thing is just, it's a distraction. Yeah. Like, you know, there's nothing wrong with, I never played video games growing up. Or even, you know, when I was in 20s or so, when they started to get real popular, because I knew, wow, I probably would waste a lot of time playing Xbox or whatever, and that would take away from my writing. So that was one area where I was actually made a good decision. But I try to explore some of all of that stuff in American Omens. And one of the things I do that, I do it by having a character who's kind of a, he really is somebody whose life has been completely transformed, and he's completely all in trying to be a, you know, a witness, trying to basically tell everybody, you know, about Jesus. And so I have this character who's like 300% on fire for God and a bit unorthodox. And I have him kind of meeting a character that's very much kind of like me, who is like, okay, this is this believer, but at times struggling and at times stressed and, you know, da, da, da. And he's so while I'm doing all this stuff with like algorithms and, you know, conspiracy and this and that, really at the heart of American Omens is you have somebody who is seeking out faith. You have somebody who's kind of struggling. They have faith, but it's kind of like, I don't know, God, like I'm not, what am I supposed to be doing? Where am I going? And then you have a third person who does not have faith. And, you know, he's pretty much anti-faith. So I tried to kind of explore those three positions while exploring the future.
I love it. Well, that's exciting. I'm really excited to dive into it and check it out. It sounds like to me, I'm just going on a guess here, but the ability for you to work with so many people over all the years, you've kind of been able to pull in a lot of different ideas and knowledge and stepping stones, just allow you to write on many different levels.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And a couple of the people I've worked with, recently, there's one project, I won't say who it is, but, they very much have a connection with, you know, the White House and lots of different stuff, and they're in ministry. And it really was this eye-opening sort of experience of just learning, they're so full of biblical knowledge. So I've been learning just these amazing truths from just listening to them narrate their life story. But at the same time, they see a very big picture of the world. Another person I worked with was, you know, somebody like Chris Kattan from Saturday Night Live. So he's somebody, and he's a riot. He's so funny, but he's in Hollywood, you know. And so you talk about what a different perspective, what a different life. And all of those people, they inform and influence my writing. I mean, I can't not let it impact my writing. And at the same time, a lot of times I'm selfish because I usually am trying to work out something in my own life through fiction I try not to do that with American Omens, but of course, you know, one of the characters is in a lot of ways a character like myself who is not a hero. It's like usually that's the person who does not take the hero's journey. He's yeah. just kind of like, yeah, I'm okay. I'm not going to go down that path. You know, it's like Luke Skywalker never getting off. What's it called? Tatooine or whatever. He just yeah. stays in the desert.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. yeah.
Looking at the moons and he's content. He doesn't go in the stars. Anyway.
That's funny.
I don't know how I got to Tatooine.
Hey, that's okay, man. We said at the beginning of the show it was going to be all over the place. So we just got to appreciate it. Okay. Travis, as we wrap up the show, there's one question. I skipped a ton of questions just for the sake of I wanted you to promote the book, talk about it, and I wanted listeners to grab it. One of the things I want to do that I always ask is if you could go back in time, what age would you go back to? And most importantly, what advice, kind of like a pep talk, would you give the younger you, knowing what you know now, but you can't change anything?
I think what I would go back to 10th grade, and I would go to myself at, I was at my third high school. And the reason why it was my third was because I happened to get kicked out of my second high school, sneaking in the girls' dorm, not doing anything terrible, but just me and some buddies. And you couldn't do that at this school. My life was just, I was going to a school and wow, I had very few friends and all that sort of stuff. And you know, I'm a teenager, but, at that point, I had gone through so much change and transition. And the older I get, like moving to Michigan really showed me how big of a deal a move can be. I mean, it really is traumatic in some ways, you know, not like traumatic abuse, but at the same time, when you're constantly uprooted, you know, I lived in, I think, 12 different homes or something and went to 10 different schools. All over the place, not in the same state, you know, that uprooting, I mean, it really impacts you. And I think what I would do is I would just tell myself, honestly, I would say, look, you know, it's okay. Like, all this stuff, it's going to make you the person you're going to be. I mean, you're going to, when you're older and in your 40s, you're going to look back and you're going to have regrets and you're going to have this pain, but you're also going to say, I wouldn't change it because it's made me who I am. And I would say, you know, God is in control. You know, right now you don't like your father at all. You have issues and you're going to have issues with not my heavenly father, but my own father. My father's alive. I love him dearly. He loves me. I know he's a fan. And as I said, he influenced this latest book of mine, but wow, he's different. And at the time, just, you know, I would say, Travis, you know, your father, he's broken just like all of us. And, but God is in control. And he made you the person you are and put all this stuff inside of you, including wanting to be a writer and insecure and da, da, da. I would just try to encourage him. And I wouldn't tell him that, you know, you've got some rocky roads ahead. You know, you're going to do some yeah. dumb things. Well, maybe I would warn him. I don't know. But that 10th grade, and I look back, it was 1987. And it's weird because it's like 1987, very critical year for me. And then 2007 was when I left Tyndale. And that was a very, very critical year. We moved to Michigan 2017. So I don't know what this seven thing is like, because it's not a bad thing, but it's like when a big change in my life happens. So
I think you're going to write your best-selling, your biggest, hugest book in 21, my friend.
I'm
telling you, dude, that'd be your third seven. I'm just saying,
yeah,
we're going to be coming back in, here in what is, well, anyway, 19, 22 years.
Two years.
Yeah.
Hey, you never know. I told a publisher this, there a woman who still works at Tyndale House, who's a colleague and a friend. And I said, you know, we both know how difficult publishing is. But I said, look, in a couple of years, if American Omens sells 100,000, which that's insane. I mean, honestly. But I said, I wouldn't be surprised. Not because of me. And I'm not even saying like, oh, this is a God thing. I just know the nature of the craziness of publishing and how anything can happen. I, at the same time, I'm not planning it. I'm not picking out a boat tomorrow. I'm not, you know, I'm just grateful to have continue to have books published. So,
so when it hits big in 2 years, just remember, say, John Fuller, Are You Real? Prophesied it.
Yes. Yeah. I like that. I will.
That's funny. You talk about that. I was actually on the phone today talking to Paul Young. And you talk about like a guy that sold like 30 million books and had a movie. I mean, all out of because his wife told him to write something to his kids.
Yeah. And there's so many stories like that in publishing. And it's not that it's completely random. I mean, people have talent.
Right. It happens.
Timing. A funny story about Paul Young, by the way. I was at this author event with Faith Words, and it was Paul Young. And then the best-selling author, Karen Kingsbury, she sold millions. And then there's me. And it's like, well, between the three of us, we've sold millions. That's my joke. But I always look at that picture. I'm like, wow, they're great people, though. But
yes.
You never know. You honestly never know when, even Left Behind, we knew that was going to be pretty successful. But it was a one book contract, and publishing was completely different then. And even Christian fiction, it changed what Christian fiction looked like. But those were the days of Barnes and Nobles and Borders and hardcovers and all that stuff. Yeah. And that book just took off. So anyway, I appreciate being able to talk writing and, you know, life journeys with you because I'd never get on my house and I don't talk to other males. So thank you.
You're welcome, man. That's awesome. Okay, man. Travis, as we wrap this up, I'm going to give you the mic. You get to leave the last piece of parting advice for our audience.
Parting advice. You know, As I've talked or over-talked in talking about my story and just saying, you know, what God's been telling me recently, this sort of like, why am I doing what I'm doing? And, you know, it's writing is this passion. And I think if you do have a passion like that, you got to pour yourself into it. You have to be persistent and all that. But, you know, these days I look at things like, you know, the Golden Globe Awards and things, accolades and music and this and that. And it's not that I don't appreciate that stuff, but I used to really put that on a pedestal. I used to idolize certain things. And I used to dream of being, you know, the next Ernest Hemingway. And as we know, Ernest Hemingway took his own life. He was really a tragic figure. Right now, I just believe like, look, I'm fortunate to do something I love, but what I really am fortunate to do is to be able to meet people who are really, really living a life that's dedicated to God and that they're pursuing that. And what I get to do a lot of times is then just learn from them and be able to write their story. And that's cool. And you know, I parting advice. See, this is my parting advice. This is why I write fiction. Because a self-help book from me would just kind of be wandering. I would just say, ask yourself the question, you know, like this, okay, you know who you are and what you do, but like, why do you do it? What that looks like in terms of God and where he's at in your life. And I am trying to be more urgent in it, not to try to be some political person, but not to try to preach. You know, my thing is writing, but at the same time, I want to be somebody who says, you know what, this is really what I believe, and not to do it on social media or this or that, to just do it in my own life with my own relationships. So
Okay.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay. How do we find you? So for our listeners wanting to connect with you, find you, get your book, how do we do all that?
Yeah. My website is www.rockstarauthor.com.
No, yeah, dude, better get it.
No, it's probably already taken.
Darn it.
Yeah, I know. But no, it's travisthrasher.com. I have a terribly old website. But anyway, I'm easy to find there, and I'm on Facebook and Twitter. I have an Instagram account where I don't say a single thing about the photos I post.
Just post. You just do selfies all day, all the time.
No, I have a rule. There's no selfies. I'm
totally messing with you, man.
I know it's weird because I honestly say no selfies. I'll occasionally do it with our daughters, but when it comes to even social media, not so good. But I do write books.
Sitting at your desk writing, you're like, side shot, front shot. Here's a picture of my pen, my book. Yeah. Do it, man. We'll post it. I love it.
The documentary, I have a DVD, a documentary of me writing American Omens.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. You're in the studio with me writing.
Okay.
It's hours. that's a terrible joke because that would be the worst, right?
Yeah, he's like, as you're sitting there trying to think, all right, man, well, we're going to wrap this up. Let's do this. Hey, Roar Nation, go and check out Travis Thrasher. I'm excited about American Omens. I hope you are too. And really just happy about the story that he shared of his journey. And if there's one takeaway that I got that really stood out to me is my favorite part is when he said, I didn't have the gift or the talent at the time, but he had the passion and he pursued it. And I think that just says a lot to everybody that if something's inside of you, you don't necessarily have to be amazing at anything to pursue what you love. You just got to go for it. So I hope Travis inspired you today to go after something you love. And Roar Nation, what I love about the company that Travis is working with, if you guys will send your email, they always give away 5 to 10 copies. So if you get on our Facebook page and just give us a shout out and say, hey, will you send me a copy? We will forward your information to the publishing company. They'll send you a book. They're really good about that. Love them for that. And please reach out to us if you guys need anything from Casey and I. We're always here to help you guys on your journey. We love y'all. Remember, be real, be authentic, and be you. God bless.
That's all for this episode of Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You. Be sure to go to areyoureal.org for your free questionnaire to identify your gifts and talents and how you can use them to help people become leaders and catapult them into their destiny to help others become the leaders of tomorrow. We appreciate you spending your time with us and look forward to helping you reach out and revolutionize next time on Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You.